You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I am Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. And if you would like an ad-free version of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Just going to plug that right here at the top. But let's get into the comic books, which are a little more fun than the plugs, and talk about Cheetah and Cheshire Rob the Justice League, number one from DC Comics, written by Greg Rucka, art by Nicholas Scott. This is a iconic creative team who are taking on the two villains of the title who are planning on doing the deed of the title. They're going to rob the Watchtower. There's a lot more going on here as these two clash. If you don't know them, Cheetah is classic Wonder Woman villain, and this is set in continuity. It picks up after the point that we last saw her in the current run of Wonder Woman. And Cheshire loves poison, and she loves poisoning things and killing people and working as an assassin and fighting that way. I had a lot of fun with this, and I was also surprised, though I shouldn't have been, given the team, how deep this was as well. There's a poignancy and sadness going between it, particularly from the beginning. But what did you think, Pete?
Well, first off, cool cover. You know what I mean? Yeah, this is fun. I like the fact that they're going to try to do this horrible idea, which is try to rob the Justice League. Why would you think you could get away with that? But this is exciting. Like, they're going to put a crew together. They're going to kind of have a plan, and then hopefully it will all go horribly wrong, and they won't rob the Justice League. But I'm on board. I think they do a good job of setting this up and kind of like getting you excited for the, you know, kind of the crew building montage that maybe we're going to get. You know what I mean?
The things that I really like about this, and I should definitely put a blanket spoiler warning for everything we're going to talk about here on the podcast today, but it starts off with Cheetah being frustrated and angered because she has this unending hunger because of her curse. We don't really talk about this through the rest of the issue, but I do think this is the underlying thing, the idea of the series, is Cheetah doesn't want to be Cheetah anymore. We haven't seen that how that plays out necessarily with Cheshire, who mostly is like, yeah, I'm having a good time killing people. Let's go. Yeah. Make him explode. And that is fun. And that's enjoying. But I assume there's going to be a little more going on with her as well. Plus, you're getting Nicholas Scott's art, which is impeccable. Yeah. The action is great. The character is great. There's a scene where it's just the two of them sitting at a diner, and it's fascinating and so much fun.
Yeah, that is a cool panel. You're right.
Just a really, really good kickoff to a series. Why don't we move on and talk about something that I'm very excited to talk to you about, Pete? All New Venom, number 9 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carlos Gomez. Again, I want to mention the spoiler.
Excuse me, I'm turning into a Super Saiyan. Come on. Come on, Al. Don't let me down. You're so close. Are we doing this? Are we fucking doing this right now? Come on, bro.
So what Pete is freaking out about right now is the first half of the issue is finishing up the fight with Dr. Octopus. We have various symbiotes who are fighting back against him in the prison that they're in. But then there's a swerve about two-thirds of the way through the issue after Mary Jane, who is currently Venom, comes home and finally has a heart-to-heart with Top Knot himself, Paul.
Paul.
Pete, you want to take it away? Because I'm curious to hear, like, talk me through your feelings reading this issue, just in general. So, I'd love to hear it. I knew what was going to happen, and I kind of wanted to be like, a ghost over your shoulder watching it.
Yeah. So first off, really cool cover. Fun fight sequence. I love a great cover. It gets you excited.
Sure. When I ask about your feelings, mostly I want to know whether you like the cover or not. And the answer is always at
the beginning of my notes. Otherwise, what are we even doing? All right. So, yeah. So we get this MJ and Paul talk and I'm going, oh, yes, because Paul is doing all of the wrong things. He's not reading the room. He's just going into his speech, which, you know, nervous guy. I get it. You know what I mean? You got something you want to get off your chest. And yeah, so he does this dump and talks about how much he loves MJ. And she's like, yeah, well, I want to break up. And I jumped out of my seat and I was like, yes, yes, peace out, Paul. This clears the deck. And I was like losing my mind. But then I'm thinking like, no way Amazing Spider-Man is going to kind of follow up on this. Like, I didn't think about that.
Don't jump the gun. We'll get there.
I just can't believe that this kept going. Because this was enough. I was like, oh, this is great news. This is just great news. So I was very excited reading this, losing my mind, cheering Al's name, just going, come on, Al, do it. Do what the fans want, Al. Be the hero that we need right now. This world is insane. We need this, Al. Come out!
And I will just mention, though they aren't directly connected, I would recommend reading All New Venom, then Amazing Spider-Man after that.
Yes.
That's the same order I read it in. And again, like, they're not explicitly connected, but you can draw your own connections there.
But also, Alex does a, you know, he takes his time, he puts together this stack, not only in order, but he curates a stack for you. And I think he does a great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Pete. I really appreciate that. I've been really enjoying this series, irregardless of what's going on with Paul and Mary Jane. And in fact, I think, like we talked about before, all the stuff with Paul in this series has been very funny as Dylan just rips into him and he just keeps dropping bummer after bummer about his personality. So I really like this conversation. I like that that everything slowed down for a moment to just have this conversation between the couple that is long overdue, rather than barreling through the superhero nature of it. It's interesting the place that they end up in, and I'm curious to see what happens next, because I do think, not to contradict Pete, but I do think they're playing with our emotions a little bit. I do think there's going to be questions about, like, how much of this breakup is Mary Jane and how much is Venom that we're going to follow going forward. That doesn't mean that they're, like, full-fledged
Marvel
going on.
Famously loves drinking fans' tears. Just, like, loves it.
It's a soap opera, and so many people, not you, of course, Pete, but so many people forget this all the time, that the whole idea is to get emotions out of you on these things. And if it was actually just like, yes, Mary Jane and Peter are happy forever, the end, that
I would show up every day for that comic,
but nothing will happen. That is the end of the comic.
I want to read something where two people are happy. All right, sue me.
Sure. Go read the marriage papers of the New York Times.
The marriage papers?
I don't know what they're called. What are they called? Marriage announcements. There you go. Oh, my God. Read those. If you want to read that, they're right next to the funny pages, and it's basically the same thing to me, because the divorce rate is high in this country, and it's getting higher.
Here's my problem, okay? Everybody's like, oh, yeah, Peter can't be happy. Peter can't be happy. Oh, shut up. We can have moments of goodness. We can also have a relationship that is a rock, that is a staple, and other things happen to them, okay?
I don't disagree with you on that. But the place that we are in right now, it already happened. They already broke up. So as it is, this tension between Paul and Mary Jane, seeing where that goes, how that plays into her relationship with Peter, what Paul does next, that instantly makes all of this much more interesting to follow for me.
All right.
We'll see. Anyway, good stuff. Excited to see what happens next. Yeah, let's talk Archie stuff. Versus Minor Threats, number one from Dark Horse Comics and Archie Comics, written by Patton Oswalt, Jordan Bloom, and Timmy Heeg, art by Scott Koblish. Per the title, we are getting these two weird worlds mashed together, specifically the Riverdale kids, thanks to some shenanigans from Sabrina, end up heading to the same city as the Minor Threats characters, with everybody getting embroiled into it, including Archie ending up in Playtime's gang by the end of the issue. These two tastes could not be more unlike each other. Like, this is not like, ooh, you got peanut butter or my chocolate, which frankly are very complimentary. It's
yes,
like,
they are.
It's you got fish in my something that doesn't work with fish. I don't know. I was about to say peanut butter, but you could have peanut butter fish. Maybe chocolate fish. No, that works as well. I don't know. A lot of tastes work together is my point. Anyway. What I really liked about this issue is Scott Koblish draws it in two entirely different styles. For the Archie characters, he draws them as the classy Archie characters. For the Minor Threats characters, he draws them in a more gritty style that is complementary to the Dark Horse book. And seeing them together clashes so hard in such a fascinating way. Great issue.
This is a fantastic issue. I also love the art on the cover. This is a cool cover. It sets a great tone for this book. And this is a blast. Love the art, love the story. This feels like a just really well-executed idea with this crossover and Sabrina thrown in the mix here. This is all the things that I love together, and this is really well-executed. This issue gets me very excited about what's to come. This is in great hands. I love this team. I feel like this is going to really take off. This is a fantastic first issue. I'm very excited for what's to come here.
Absolute Superman, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Carmine DiGiandomenico. Big issue here as Superman faces down with Ra's al Ghul, leading to a big twist reveal at the end of the issue that I really feel like I should have saw coming, but I love what it has to say here. Another great issue. My only little qualm with it, as much as I really like Carmine DiGiandomenico's art, is it's a little bit of a bummer to me that Absolute Superman has had several artists at this point when the Absolute line has been so purposeful and art forward. This is the one book that feels like they've been going forward so quickly and they keep switching it up a little bit. And it's a good issue. It looks good. It's not that it's worse or better than what Rafa Sandoval was doing, but I missed the consistency of that.
Huh, interesting. Okay. Well, yeah, I feel like, first off, cool cover. We kind of get this reveal at the end here that's kind of an oh shit moment. And my only, I love this book. This continues to be a great kind of series. We're 10 deep here and I'm having a blast. But something that was teased earlier, which I'm hoping we're going to get back to, is the Lois and this version of Superman's maybe relationship, maybe how they work together or something, because they met a couple times and they're in such different places that I was like, very excited to kind of get a new take on a very old relationship. But they kind of went away from that, and I'm hoping they're going to get back to that. But all that being said, a lot of action in here, some crazy kind of twists and turns. I'm still on this ride and loving it.
Interesting. Based on what you said earlier in the podcast, I wouldn't have expected that you'd want to see something romantic happen in one of these comic books, but I guess so.
Yeah, it's very I'm weird surprising. Like that. Yeah.
What I like about the reveal at the end, and I'm not really spoiling it, but one of the big themes that Jason Aaron has been playing with throughout this book is how corporations control every aspect of human life. And here we get to see how that affects different sides of the issue is the best way that I'm going to say it. Something
sides.
Well, there is manipulation that goes on where billionaires are playing both sides against each other to reach their own ends. And that's exactly what they're doing through the lens of a big action Superman adventure. One World Under Doom, number 6 from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by R.B. Silva. And this issue, one of the most dynamic things that can happen, does happen. Reed Richards and Dr. Doom sit down and have a televised debate.
Oh, man. Now, you say that, and it's funny, but I was, like, hanging on every word of this debate. I thought this was such a interesting battle of wits that they both signed up for. And I was kind of like, yo, Mr. Fantastic, you're smart, but like Dr. Doom is kind of a speech giver. You know what I mean? Like, so this was a cool kind of setup, and I think really well delivered. I thought, you know, not a fan of speeches, but this I thought did such a great job of giving us kind of bite-sized parts that make it really interesting, and the kind of twists and turns that happen afterwards. You know, crazy kind of reveal. We haven't, you know, all we've heard about is Doom's plans, but now we kind of get a look into what's actually going on. And our true colors are showing here. So this has been such a cool setup. And I cannot wait for the next issue. This is great. I'm having a blast with this One World Under
Interesting.
Doom.
Well, first of all, I'm glad you're enjoying it. But just to, I definitely had the opposite reaction because when they get to the debate, there are several sections where it's like, let's have this debate. And then the next panels are like, well, they had that debate. And it was quite the debate. And they said several things. And people were hanging on their every word. And I'm like, I'd love to hear what they were saying. That was so interesting. Both Reed Richards and what were their arguments? I don't know. And
they gave us little snippets of it.
I don't want to
sit through a whole speech, bro.
I know you don't, but nothing ideologically has worked about this comic book or made any sense whatsoever so far. So if there was any chance to get through some sort of philosophy, it just struck me. This is nothing against Ryan North, who I think is doing a bang up job on Fantastic Four in particular, but it makes me think that like, somebody like a Jonathan Hickman or a Grant Morris or something could have put some crazy ideas in there that would have really showed us the ideological difference between these two characters rather than yada, yada, yada.
No, because we got inside their heads, too, while the speech was happening. And Reed was sweating kind of what was happening and then, like, surprised at kind of the decisions. I like the breakdown where he was like, what he's doing here is making an emotional choice. You know, when he's like, you want to talk about his history, I'll tell you about history. I thought that was great where I, you know, instead of it just being giant blocks of just dialogue, the way it was broken up, I felt like it flowed so much better. So sorry we had opposite reactions, but I really liked the more digestible kind of breakdown of it. So
I hear you. Interesting, you like that, the ChatGPT version.
I
don't like AI.
So go fuck yourself, Cornell. I'm not going to sit here for this.
I will say the one thing that I also didn't love the reveal of how Doom is getting his power, because I felt like we knew that was coming, but at the same time, it's such a bummer to be like, oh, so he was
what?
Just...
Dude, come on. Oh, the guy who's been a supervillain this whole time, you're bummed that he's still a supervillain, bro?
No, my main thing is that, like, I don't think they've really done enough with the concept of him being Sorcerer Supreme. And the idea that everything that he's done as Super Sorcerer Supreme is basically the exact same thing we would see in any Doctor Strange comic, which is fine. The reveal here, as we said, spoiler warning, is that he is having a million what he calls volunteers who he is sucking the energy off of to power his magic.
Classic Matrix, humans are batteries.
100%.
Yeah.
But there doesn't seem to be anything different than what he could have done as Sorcerer Supreme. So I maybe we'll find out. But why was he sucking the power from a million people? Why did he do this? There was nothing that seems to delineate there. And yeah, again, maybe we'll find out. The one very cool moment that also ended up weird was when he, per the cover, actually ripped off Mr. Fantastic's face. But then Mr. Fantastic's face kept talking separate from his skull. So I have some follow-up questions, but maybe I'll leave them for another time.
Oh, wow. You don't know how face talking happens when you don't have a face?
Well, you are a face scientist, Pete, so if you could explain it to me, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. So even if you were, it comes down to a classic kind of saying in olden days Japan, even if you were to cut a samurai's head clean off, he would still be able to finish one task with uncertainty. So even if you are ripping off somebody's face while they're talking, they still get the chance to finish their sentence. It's just
right. And now when you say finish their task, that's because they're using ChatGPT, which is so fast and powerful. It can answer any of your questions instantly.
What is happening? Why is Doom and ChatGPT lining up for you in your head?
I don't know. Because they both suck. All right. Why don't we move on and talk about World
Tree? I'm mad that Dune... Doom ends up being a bad guy in this. I was really hoping he was going to turn around the world.
I'm just saying that doesn't seem to be a clear reason why any of this is happening. World He's Tree number 16 from Image Comics. Written, you're Pete. I'm Alex. Hello, these are all of our names. Let's just say names from now on. Written by, that's what I'm going to do, actually. Written by James Tynion IV, art by Fernando Blanco. In this issue, we are still in the future of the world. Question marks whether we'll ever get back to the present. But the future has been destroyed by the naked people who are powered by the Undernet. And they are ready to destroy the last vestiges of civilization. What'd you think about this one, Pete?
Well, you know, it's kind of weird. It's funny that you called it the naked people, because in my notes, I was like, it's really turning into the naked people versus the clothing people here. And, you know, I guess the naked people are the bad guys. But, mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is what it's like every day on a nude beach.
Yeah, I want the future to be like, you know what? You know, naked people don't have to be the evil ones. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like the future. Well, maybe they're not. Maybe they're not. They keep saying, like, it's not what you think and it's not bad. So maybe the nudists have it right.
Yeah, I agree. So first off, love this art, the style, the colors really set this amazing kind of tone for this comic, this kind of futuristic tone, if you will, which I think is such a cool choice. This is a haunting kind of story, and the art does such a great job of pulling us into this world. I also like the small moments that we had in this comic where, you know, the guy's just like, man, taking a nice shower, you know, it's like heaven, you know. Oh, man, nothing like a good cup of coffee. Fun, right? In this giant, crazy story, you know, the small kind of things are just so important. So even though this book is insane at times, it's nice that they do kind of have these smaller, more powerful moments. So, yeah, but, you know, evil naked people are really making this tough. So I do think this is very interesting. I love the art. I love the writing. I'm excited to keep reading and find out what hobbies.
Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Brian Buccellato, art by Christian Duce. The Justice League characters are over in the Monsterverse now. Superman is fighting Lex Luthor in the land of the big monkeys from the last Godzilla x Kong movie.
Right,
meanwhile,
right.
Some other characters are doing a bunch of other things that are going on. I know that sounds very vague, but everybody's sort of all over the place doing their little bits of business, trying to figure out what the Legion of Doom and Task Force X are up to, which is make giant kaiju-sized versions of themselves. But
wow, crazy.
Between everything, I want to talk about, I think, the weirdest idea this issue has.
Yes,
the book has.
Dude, let's get into it. Yes.
Ooh, I don't know if we're thinking about the same thing.
Harley Quinn talking with herself. Yes, dude. Oh, my God.
So the idea here is that the Monsterverse isn't just another universe. It is part of the DC multiverse. So all the characters from the DC universe exist in the Monsterverse, just they are different. So, for right. example, Harley Quinn goes to see Dr. Harleen Quinzel
yeah.
and asks her where Mr. J is so she can find the normal Joker, who is different from the Joker in her universe. And she calls out, I'm forgetting who, but she calls out at least one other person that she thinks exists in the universe. That's weird. That is really weird.
Right, so I want to talk about why you think it's weird versus why I think it's weird, because there's no way this lines up.
Definitely not.
I think it's weird because I thought Harley Quinn came to the understanding that Mr. J is bad for her. And the fact that she wants to try to date another Miss J, I'm like, dude, you're sliding backwards, girl. Like, what are you doing? Like, this guy is a horrible decision for you. I thought we were on the same page of that. And I thought you were never going to wanting to get back together with Mr. J. So when she's having this conversation with, you know, Dr. Quinzel, I was just, I was heartbroken. I was just heartbroken. Mm-hmm. The fact that she's trying to date another Joker just... It hurts me. It hurts me to read.
I hear you, and that is a fair point that I definitely did not think about. But I do think it's excused a little bit by the fact that this is a different version of the DC Universe. This is not the mainline comics version, as we've seen, because various characters have permanently died over the course of these two series in crazy ways. Yeah. The thing that's weird to me about it is this is canonical with the MonsterVerse. So they have now established that somewhere in the MonsterVerse movies, while Godzilla attacks are going on, there's a Harley Quinn that's just running around, and there's probably a Clark Kent and a Lois Lane. There's a Metropolis out there somewhere, maybe, things like that. That's strange. I don't think that's anything they'll ever address in the movies in any way, but that weirds me out, man. That's all.
It would be cool if Superman, like, punched Godzilla in one of the movies, you know what I mean?
My other thing is, like, I wish there were more Godzilla and Kong in this. I know there's not a lot.
That's what's my next note. Was like, hey, man, you know what would be cool? Some Godzilla and Kong, you know what I mean?
Very Justice League heavy, particularly. Yes. And they keep being like, whoa, it's Kong. Ooh, there's Godzilla. But they don't do much.
No. Yeah, the last page reveal is a little kind of like, yeah, let's get back to the good part, can we? Cool. I hate reading about Harley sliding backwards in her life.
Yeah. Oh. But if we could get a little bit more about Barry Allen's head wound, I think that would be good. All right, let's move on to talk about
Great art.
And I'm enjoying it anyway.
Yes, I am having a blast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Captain America number 2 for Marvel, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Valerio Schiti. The big reveal at the end of the last issue. This takes place shortly after Captain America was unfrozen from the ice. They've shifted the timeline so that there is another Captain America named David Coulton who was brought around, and he fought in the Iraq War and is helping bring down the Taliban. To give you an idea of the sliding timeline of when Cap was unfrozen. Still weird on that, but I do think what Chip Zdarsky and company are building here is interesting, as you have these two very different Captain Americas coming up against Doom. It's very Winter Soldier coded, by which I mean the movie, because it's challenging Cap's morality right after he's unfrozen. Should he go to Caesar Gray? Should he be good? Should he be bad? What should he do? And that's a good place to put it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I wasn't excited about the over-the-top douchebag Captain America, but it just makes our boy look that much better. So I thought
that was cool. How do you feel about the fact that we already have two or three of those?
I know.
This is another one.
It just seems like, why do we keep doing this? But apparently it's a fun well to go back to. Also, great cover. Cool Doom versus Cap. It gets you excited for what they kind of build up to. So I feel like they do a good job of delivering on that. Love the art. I thought this was fun.
Rick and Morty versus the Universe, Summer of Love, number 1 from Odie Press, written by Daniel Kibblesmith and Jody Hauser, art by Phil Murphy. This is the second part of the Rick and Morty versus the Universe crossover, which mostly includes a mini series and then a couple of one-shot spin-offs. Here we're getting to see Summer take the universe onto a bachelorette party. And I will say, as a fan of the show, I think they perfectly channel the tone of the show here, not just in the humor, but also the pathos of the show in this issue, because it really digs into Summer's psychology in an interesting way. So really like this issue. Also, crazy violent.
I mean, it's Rick and Morty. But, I agree. I do think this does such a great job of channeling the cartoon and making it feel like it really is an extension of that and in the universe. It's a summer-ish, which, Summer is a cool character, but maybe not my favorite. But
who's your favorite?
I would go with probably Rick.
That definitely feels like you've never watched an episode or read an issue or anything. You just know the name of the show and said the first word.
No, I mean, I've seen a lot of...
I love and...
Well, I mean, it was hard because I was like, oh, there's a lot of fun, sure, you know, characters, but Rick is a raging alcoholic and, you know, struggles with that. So, you know, it's something that I
yeah, it's relatable.
Yeah, it's relatable. I like that about him. Anyways, yeah, I mean, you know, Summer's like, fuck you, I'm going to throw the craziest rager this world has ever seen. So fun setup, you know what I mean? And they deliver on that promise.
Storm number 11 from Marvel, written by Murawa Ayodele, art by Mario Santoro with CF Via. If you're interested in this crossover, check out the interview we did with Murawa when he was on our live show a couple of weeks back. But as this is the second part of the Thunder War crossover that takes place entirely in Storm. And yeah, boy, oh boy, there is a lot going on in between a Thunder Council convening, an evil Thunder God closing in on Storm. Also, Galactus is just kind of like hanging out. Lots happening here.
I'm not going to let you... All right. First off, let me just start by saying amazing cover. This is awesome. I'm having such a blast with this Storm comic. This is so great. I was geeking out. Beta Ray Bill's in this. This is really badass. This whole God Council meeting thing was awesome. The image of Galactus sitting next to a hospital is a very powerful image in an unbelievable panel. So when you were like, oh, Galactus is hanging out.
Why dude, is it? I like that panel. Awesome. I thought it was fun, but why was it powerful?
Because, dude, even a hospital takes a giant entity and makes them sit the fuck down. Like, the fact that he is just, like, sitting next to a hospital, kind of somber. A lot of sad shit.
It was
happening
powerful
in a
to you that Galactus needed to deal with our overcrowded healthcare system.
Yeah, it's a real problem, man. And even Galactus needs to sit down and be like, I don't know how to fucking fix this. This is fucking shitty, bro.
Yes. I'm sorry. It doesn't say Devourer of Worlds on your Aetna card, so we can't accept your insurance. Oh, apologies.
Oh, man. Oh, it's not funny. It's not funny because it's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this continues to be so great, man.
I don't have Cobra. I am Cobra.
Oh, Jesus. Anyway. Yeah, amazing art. This continues to be on the pull list. This is great.
Great stuff. Beautiful art. This is one thing that I did want to call out that I think I've been forgetting to mention. The sound effects in this book are so good.
Oh,
there is
yes,
a thing
dude.
Where it's like, I'm forgetting the exact words, but it's like swipe, grab, throw. Very fun. Makes me laugh every time. Absolute Green Lantern number 5 from DC Comics, written by Al Ewing, art by Janoi Lindsay. In this issue, there is a big fight between Joe Mulan and Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan is the Black Hand. Joe Mulan is the Green Lantern. But there's a very different continuity. We have a lot of different things going on at the same time here as we continue to flesh out this mythology. I continue to really like this book, but we have hit a critical mass in terms of Green Lantern things where it starts to feel like we just sort of threw everything up in the air and jumbled it around. So I'm like, oh, that's Hector Hammond, but that thing is a yellow fear lantern, but that means a different thing. So there's a little bit of a puzzle going on in my brain when I'm reading this.
Okay, that's fair. Cool cover, creepy ring beginning, which a horror movie start. I'm always like, oh boy, this is too scary for me. Maybe I shouldn't be reading this. But amazing art, a lot of kind of tentacle stuff. But love the kind of big Green Lantern symbol. That was very cool looking. I thought the last panel kind of ending was really cool. The Be Without Fear. That's fun. Yeah, I like the look of this, and I like how different it feels from other DC stuff. I like the fact that this is taking big swings and doing stuff with characters and pushing them in weird directions. So, yeah, this continues to be very enjoyable.
Daredevil, Cold Day in Hell, number 3 from Marvel, written by Charles Soule, art by Steve McNiven. This is the final issue of this 3-issue prestige series.
Come on!
as Daredevil, who brief old man Daredevil, who briefly has his powers back, is trying to save the city from Bullseye, who has imprisoned Punisher and a girl who can create big lights and explosions. Pete, you were psyched about this one. You got to be. Take it away.
Oh, my God. This was so awesome. This, to me, is just a legendary run here. What a cool idea. What a great concept. Cool looking cover, but man, is it fucked up. I mean, I will be damned. This is just an unbelievable comic. There were so many oh shit panels and oh shit moments. Huge spoilers, but the Bullseye spitting his tooth out and then saying, "Bullseye, I lost my mind." That was so cool. Oh my God. And the, what a glorious, I love the Daredevil speech to the kid. Oh, amazing art and action. This is just legendary Daredevil stuff. I feel like Charles Soule did such a great job of like really capturing this idea and playing it out in such a epic way. And Steve McNiven's art just kind of escalates it to, it was crazy to see Daredevil versus Bullseye in this. And then the use of Frank Castle is so fucked up, but great. Really felt like Frank, even though it was a shell of himself. Oh my God, just some amazing panels. This is a hell of a ride, a hell of a read. Cold day and fucking hell.
It would be very easy for this to feel derivative of Dark Knight Returns, and it's clearly inspired by that, like we've talked about over the course of the three issues. But I think they really stuck the landing here. And then, like you said, they made it, they powered through that feeling by making it very fun, big action, a big mission statement on Daredevil and who he is, Bullseye and who he is, maybe less so on Frank Castle because he's mostly like an enraged, almost dead monster in this thing. Yep. But very fun, gorgeous art from Steve McNiven as well. And I think just a nice little coda on Charles Soule's run on Daredevil as well. Ancestral Recall, number one from Ahoy Comics, written by Jordan Clark, art by Atagun Ilhan. If you didn't listen to it, go listen to our interview with Jordan Clark from this week's live show. But this is about a guy named Melvin who is feeling artistically stymied when his wife is taken by an AI from the future. And so he tries to get her back. And as he does, cosmically, somehow he starts accessing powers from ancestors past, from the history. Great art, like we talked about on the show. Really fun, wild mix of concepts here. And even though there is a lot going on, it keeps it really character-focused, very light throughout.
Yeah, this is just so cool. I really love this kind of part of a love story that we see kind of get ripped apart. And this is such an interesting, unique idea. I love the kind of like the way the main character talks through grunts and kind of messy scrambled word balloons. It's just, it's got such a great feel to it. You immediately kind of like are rooting for this character in such a great way. And the art sets such a cool tone to a world that you want to explore more. Yeah, I was really impressed with this as a number one issue. And this is crazy kind of idea that in the future, you know, if you screw something up, they can kind of take things away. So I don't know. Very kind of cool. And I want more. I can't wait for more.
Well, Blink and You'll Miss It, number one from Boom Studios, written by Ethan S. Parker and Griffin Sheridan, art by Keith Browning. This focuses on a woman who ran away from home when she was a kid, comes back as a much older woman and finds things have really taken a turn for the worse. There's a bunch of twists and turns here by the end of the book. But as usual for this team, I thought it was really a nice, dark character work. The twists, multiple twists in the final pages really bring into focus what they're trying to do with the series, or at least blow it wide open. But even up until then, I thought, through the sparseness of the dialogue and the art, they did a really good job of the idea of what it is like to leave a place and then come back years later and, per the title, feel like, oh, you blinked and everything changed. You changed, the world around you changed. Some of the things are the same, but mostly everything is different.
Yeah, just really, the cover does such a great job of setting up this kind of intense, creepy-ass kind of like, you don't know what you're going to get. Really impressed with the art and the tone of this. Like you said, so many cool kind of twists and turns. But man, that creepy-ass last panel, whoo, it'll get you. But yeah, if you love kind of horror twists and turns kind of thing, this will be perfect for you.
Batgirl, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Takeshi Miyazawa. Last issue, Batgirl found out that she has a secret half-brother who's been training to be just like her, and they were attacked by the first of many warriors who are coming for them. Together, they try to fight that warrior. This issue doesn't quite work. You know, they can't really quite get together. And then they figure out how to get it together. I love the issue-focused nature of this book. I love the action. I love what they're saying about Batgirl. I was the holdout at the beginning of this run, but I am all in at this point. No pun on the DC initiative.
Nice, dude. Love to hear that. Yeah, amazing cover. Yeah, love the fact that we're sitting in this brother-sister reveal and the kind of things that are happening, and love the art, love the action. This is one of my favorites on the shelves right now. And as JT's Sizzle always says, he loves brain humping. And man, do we get inside the characters' heads. And
sorry, real quick. Which
he's
episode,
a thought monster.
Which episode did he say that on, that he loves brain humping?
Oh, God. He said it for so long. He's always said, like, oh, yeah, I love getting inside characters' heads. You know what I mean?
Oh, but yeah. No, I've heard the get inside characters' heads. You like to say that he says that a lot. But when specifically did he say brain humping?
Oh, man, he said it a bunch. I can't remember when the last time he said
it. Did you write it down on one of your Arby's pads or something like that? Sorry, wrong podcast. We talked about that on a different
podcast. Don't cross the streams, man.
Don't cross the streams. Nobody has to know about your Arby's pets.
There was an artist where you said Arby's and then Silva.
I gotta say,
are you gonna bring up the Arby's thing again?
Here's the thing about Arby Silva is literally every time I read an issue of One World Under Doom, I get to Ryan North and art by Arby Silva, and I'm like, sir, Arby's. This is an Arby's. And I feel like that's probably rude to him. Yeah. So I don't want to say that.
Because his art's amazing.
His art's amazing. I don't want to say that. I would never say that out loud.
Yeah, good thing.
Certainly not on some sort of recorded medium.
Oh, that would be so embarrassing.
It would. For me.
But yeah, if you're a real thought monster like JT says, you know, you'll definitely kind of enjoy the fact that we do get to kind of learn more about Batgirl in this, which is really great.
Well, why don't you all hump your brains over to the next one with Amazing Spider-Man number 9 from Marvel, written by Joe Kelly, art by Michael Dowling. Pete, excited to hear what you thought about this one as Peter Parker recovers from his beating of a lifetime in the last issue from Hellgate. Mm-hmm. Turns out he's seemingly given up being Spider-Man. He's got a boot cast on his foot. He's actually going to his job, but he's not talking to Aunt May. He's not dating Shay, the love of his life. He's dating somebody else, it seems like.
Who's Hun?
Who is Hun? That is the big question on everybody's lips. But we also get, like we hinted earlier, seemingly sort of the pseudo second part of this conversation as MJ comes to see Peter and reveal that she's Venom. Over to you, Pete.
Yeah, so the emotional roller coaster of this is just insane. But first off, crazy cover, really impressive art. But what the fuck just happened, dude? I was on such a high. I was having such a great time. But okay, so MJ, correct me if I've read this wrong, but it feels like MJ shows up to Peter's. All right, well. You talked about this.
Do you want me to lay this out? Because it feels trapped in a glass cage of your own emotion.
I am trapped in a glass cage of emotion, and milk was a horrible choice. But I have to say that, like, also the stuff that happened before this was upsetting. Because, like, as we know, as we've seen, Peter Parker has these skills. He has this responsibility. And so when a bad guy goes by him and he just goes, yeah, I'm not going to do anything about it, I was like, you know, this was a bait the big kind of moment for Peter Parker before, where it was like great ability, great responsibility. You know, like this whole thing of like you can't sit on the sidelines and let bad guys just run around. And that's exactly what he was doing in this. So I was like, what the fuck is going on? And then more what the fuck is going on, because MJ shows up to be like, hey, I love you. And he goes, oh, well, I thought maybe you wanted to get back together, and turns around to leave. And I was like, how did this, how did you get confused? Like, how did you mess this up, Peter? MJ's in front of you. And I feel like we cut away, and I'm like, the next thing that should be said is MJ going, yeah, let's get back together. But I feel like that's not what's going to happen. So I was just, I can't.
You're really going through it now, Pete. Let me just lay it out for anybody who didn't read this issue. So MJ comes over and is like, hey, I'm having some problems right now. I need a friend. To be clear, I just need you as a friend. And then shows him.
She doesn't say, to be clear, I just need you as a friend.
Yes, she
just
does.
Says,
that's the exact
she says, I need a friend.
No, she says, okay. I'm sorry. But she says, I need you as a friend. Like, they emphasize the word friend. That's what she needs right now. Because the thing she needs to talk to him about is the fact that she's been bound with Venoms. Venom pops out. And Peter is like, says exactly what you said. Huh. I actually thought that maybe you said we're going to get back together. You wanted to get back together. And then he closes the door on her.
How does he whiff on that? How does he whiff on that?
Because he doesn't want to.
What does he think she's talking about? Her and Venom getting together? Like being friends? Like, why does he think like, oh, I thought you wanted to get back
together? I feel like you are missing something here. She just listened to the words that are coming out of my mouth.
You say friend, but I
do
hear
you understand
opening
the
for
words
a relationship.
That are coming out of my mouth.
No,
you're supposed to say, "Ain't nobody understand the words coming out of your mouth." I'm dropping so many references to make you feel better, Pete. Okay?
I appreciate that, but I can't.
MJ comes over not because of the events of All New Venom this past issue, but because she is bound to Venom and she's having some troubles with that. She needs to talk to Peter about it. She emphasizes to him, just like, listen, to be clear, I need you. I know we're having our troubles because of everything that's been going on between us. We haven't necessarily been seeing eye to eye, but I need your help because I don't know what to do about the fact that I am Venom. That is what she is saying to him. He, meanwhile, thought she was going to say, I'm still in love with you, let's get back together. Yeah. And she didn't say that. He, whatever he is going through, is pissed off, closed the door, and slams it in her face. So they don't get to have that conversation. Couple of little takeaways there. One, yes, of course there are feelings between them. And yes, of course, that was what we are slowly building up toward, but they are taking their time. I'll remind you, I don't think I've ever said this before, but these comics are a soap opera, and they are playing with your emotions here, Pete. My God. Second of all, we don't know what's going on with Peter Parker very purposefully in this issue. Something happened to him between the last issue and this issue that led to this. We do know this is maybe a mild spoiler, but they've already put this out in solicits. There seems to be potentially two Spider-Mans that are coming up. We get to see one of them at the end of this issue, which is a very violent Spider-Man. And there is another one that's going to be coming up soon that seems to be a cosmic Spider-Man who is in space. So my guess, this is just a theory, but my guess is that whatever happened with Hellgate may have split Spider-Man not into two, but into three. So we are getting the Earthbound, very violent Spider-Man. We're getting the Spacebound, probably heroic Spider-Man. And then I think we have Peter Parker, who has been separated into this guy who has separated himself from everybody else. So once they are integrated again, whether it is two or three of them, we're going to have to deal with the fallout of this and maybe have that conversation with Mary Jane down the road, but that's not going to happen right now.
Okay, no emotion, Jones. How did you feel when you read that fucking talk between the two of them?
I felt great. I love door slams. They're one of my favorite sounds in the world.
You were like,
no,
oh, cool.
It plays on your emotions because you're like, oh man, is she coming to say that she's in love with Peter? And she's not. And then he rejects her. Of course that's hard. Pete, we want to see them together. Everybody wants to see them together. The thing is, though, like, I don't need to see them together right now and be done with the story. I enjoy the aching.
All right, bro. But
that is the beauty of a romantic comedy. And I know, the thing you like is the kiss at the end, and you always fast forward through the entire romantic comedy. Just watch the kiss at the end and are happy for the rest of your day, right? Yes. Okay, no. Good. Hellboy Go in fuck Love. Yourself. Look, they're in love. Hellboy in Love, The Art of Fire, number
Hellboy's
one.
Hellboy's in trouble. Hellboy's
from Dark
in real
Horse
trouble
Comics,
here.
Written by Mike Mignola and Christopher Golden, art by Alex Nieto. Hellboy and his new girlfriend are going on a fun supernatural trip, and like Pete said, they're in big trouble. Classic Hellboy stuff in this issue, and I do really like this relationship. Also, really like seeing Liz and Abe Sapien in this issue. That was fun as well.
Yeah, that was great to see them. Yeah, I mean, this was just kind of a great kind of like, oh, sweet start. And then it's like, oh, God, oh, they're in real trouble. You know, you can't just wake up a witch and think everything's going to go according to plan. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you just, I mean, that would just be dumb. You would think Hellboy, after all these years, would maybe have a little bit better knowledge of that. But hey, I'm still having a blast. I miss Hellboy, so it's nice to get this version of Hellboy. And yeah, I mean, I'm not completely won over by her, but I'm starting to be. Mm-hmm. I just feel like she's trouble right now. She's kind of yeah, I don't know. But this is very enjoyable, fantastic art. Sometimes you fall in love with a troublemaker. I don't know what to tell you.
Birds of Prey, number 24 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Sammy Basri. In this issue, the birds are continuing the fight to rescue Barda from Ink, a black ink metahuman who has covered her entire body, and take her and her over. As usual with this book, great art, beautiful action, and just some really... Kelly Thompson is just really good about thinking two steps ahead for her characters so that they can all kind of one-up each other one after another, and it's just a very fun read.
Yeah, I agree. This is a blast. I love this team. I want them to never stop making this comic because it's just so awesome. Hey, look at this cover. This is so cool. Barda is the best. Yeah, I love all the action in this. And as Justin always says, you know, there's some fun headhunting moments in here where you're really inside the person's head and kind of enjoying.
Sorry, did you change it from brain humping to head hunting? Is that...
Yeah, no, it's as he always says. Sometimes he's talking about humping, sometimes he's talking about hunting. But you know, you're always inside the head.
don't do that.
Yeah, definitely don't do that.
Could cause some problems in both directions.
But this is a continues to be an amazing comic.
Wolverine by Chris Claremont, number one from Marvel, written by Chris Claremont, art by Tom Riley. This is actually a reprint from, I'm forgetting the exact name, but I think it was like Paragon Edition or something like that. It was this really, really high-end prestige collection of Chris Claremont stories. So for the first time, it's being published as a single issue, but it's got Wolverine. He's fighting Sabretooth. The rest of the X-Men get involved. It's heavily tied to continuity. You got some great Tom Riley art here. If you've been enjoying his stuff over on G.I. Joe, you get more of that pristine action in this issue. You know what? You got to know what's going on with Chris Claremont's run on X-Men to understand this, but I do, so I liked it.
Yeah, I was very excited by this. This is an intense ish, but a lot goes down. Tons of fighting. Sabretooth fucking shit up physically and mentally. Just amazing art and action. Can't, yeah, this is awesome.
It's funny that it is much more a Sabretooth story than a Wolverine story. Like, he's basically sidelined at a certain point, and it becomes about a lot of other things. But those other things are really fun, and the way Sabretooth takes down the X-Men one by one is really cool. So if you are a fan, this is a good one to pick up. Something is Killing the Children, number 43 from Boom Studios, written by James Tynion IV, art by Werther Dildera. This is another back in the day issue as we are following young Erica Slaughter and her mentor at a alpine retreat where, of course, there are monsters who are, you're not going to believe this, killing the children.
Oh, come on.
I know. And things are starting to come to a head in this issue.
Leave those kids alone.
I will say another great issue of this book. Always enjoy this book. But I saw a thing right before we got on. No, this is not a bad butt. This is like kind of like a hunting butt or a humping butt, whichever one you want to call. I don't know what term you usually use, Pete.
It's JT Sizz.
No, it's you. I think you talk about humping butts and hunting butts. He talks about humping braids and hunting braids. Anyway, I know both of you very well. James Todd the Fourth, somebody put up in response to like, hey, what's the worst piece of bad writing advice that still works for you prompt on Blue Sky? And somebody put up that what they do is they write out all of the dialogue first before they go back and write anything else for their comics. And they're like, that might be terrible, but that's kind of what I do and works for me. And James Todd the Fourth said, that's what I do for Something is Killing the Children for 45 wow. issues so far. So what he does was apparently write out all of the dialogue first, then go back and revise it. And that's when he adds panel breaks and starts planning out the pacing of it and everything. And obviously like revising the dialogue from there. But I do think that explains a lot about the pace of this book, which often feels like 20 pages of here is a wash of a couple of things that happen in the middle of other things. It is a very decompressed book that way. And I think that probably comes from this method that he's using, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I love this book. This continues to be amazing. It's fun to kind of get this look back at young Erica's life and kind of how she was trained and brought up and stuff. So, and yeah, it's also just great to have somebody who's like listening to the kids and helping them. That's really sweet and amazing. And all this madness. God, I love this art and this just continues to be such a legendary comic. Yeah, man, this is awesome.
And I'll mention the other piece of news about this book. This came out of San Diego Comic-Con, which is bananas. They've been contracted to do at least 100 issues of this book.
Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy. This book comes out bi-monthly. Wow. They're not even to issue 50 yet, and they're already contracted well through
Buckle
issue
up,
100 or beyond. Yeah,
it's nice to have a little staple that's going to run for a little bit, you know.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Radiant Black number 36 from Image Comics, written by Kyle Higgins and Joe Clark, art by Stefano Simeone. This is not exactly a done in one issue because there's ramifications for the future, but we are following a new Radiant Yellow. And Radiant Yellow, for those who are not familiar with the book, is somebody who can see future possibilities and then act on them. That's their power. Here we get a homeless woman who becomes the bearer of the Radiant Yellow, and it follows what happens to her. I thought this was a great issue. Really sad, poignant, creatively done with the art. I love that they threw this in the middle of the ongoing story of Marshall.
Yeah, it's really impressive to be able to pull this off in everything that's happening. You know what I mean? Because it's like, on paper, you would think, hey, what the fuck are you doing? You know, you're like, all this stuff going on, and it's like, let's really slow this down and really kind of set a different kind of tone. And this feels very different, which is impressive, but also fits. I was just really impressed by the swings that this book is taking, and it feels so cool but different, but also a part of it all. Amazing art, very cool idea, and well-executed, impressive swerve. God, I love this book.
Gwenpool, number 4 from Marvel, written by Kevin Scott, art by Stefano Nessi. In this issue, Gwenpool is dead and her spirit has taken over Spider-Man. Meanwhile, Gwen Stacy, who's been resurrected by the Weapon X program, is trying to figure out what her origin is. And we do, in fact, find out what her origin is. And it is a very deep dive continuity thing that's going on here as we continue to walk through the series. I don't want to slag this off too much, but even with this explanation, or particularly with this explanation, I do not know what's going on here. Like, I understand what's going on here, but I don't know why we are doing any of this, either for Gwenpool or Gwen Stacy or Spider-Man or Kate Bishop or even Jeff the Land Shark, why exactly he's there. I'm very confused about this comic.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear you say that because I thought maybe it was just me, but a lot of ghost body switching things going on here to keep track of. And then, I mean, there's fun moments. The Jeff stuff was fun. And, you know, I like, you know, the humor of this as well. But yeah, this got.
It just feels like maybe there's too many things going on. Like, I like Gwenpool breaking out of the page and going meta and figuring out what's going on. If they wanted to say something about death and resurrection in comic books, I think they could have done that with a Gwenpool story. And those parts are kind of interesting and certainly very fun and winky. But then the Gwen Stacy stuff, if they wanted to wrap up a bit of continuity that mostly nobody remembered from decades ago, they could have done that separately from Gwenpool, because they're both Gwens, but Gwenpool is Gwendolyn Poole. She's not Gwen Stacy. And they're not doing enough with the fact that, like, they confuse each other. This is also not the character of Gwen Stacy. She's somebody entirely different. So again, it's like too many ideas going on at the same time, and they're clashing too hard with each other when one of them might have made for a more interesting miniseries.
It's a classic hat on a hat. It's a classic
hat on a hat. Hat on a hat. Have you seen, sorry, this is a side thing, but this has stopped me from saying hat on a hat recently. Did you watch Hacks? Do you watch Hacks?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you watch the most recent season of Hacks?
No.
Oh, okay. The most recent season of Hacks, they bring in, Deborah Vance brings in a medium to the new writer's room they're working in, where they fired everybody. They're bringing in the new writers. And the medium is like, there's a lot of weird energy in this room. I keep hearing the phrase hat on a hat. And it's very funny, but I was like, oh no, stop calling me out, show. Never saying that again. Oh, anyway, great hilarious. Show. Poison that's Ivy, hilarious. Number 35 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, art by Marcio Takara. Big things going down this issue as Poison Ivy settles her beef with the Seattle Plant Gang. That's definitely not their name, but that's what I'm going to call them anyway. And the one thing that I'll say without spoiling too much about this issue, though we can certainly get into it, is I love that the series continues to not shy away from Poison Ivy being a villain, even though she is conflicted by what she does.
Yeah, it's crazy that there's that like really badass panel where, you know, spoilers, but she says, you know, the quote unquote bad person's like, you know, you should have killed me. It would have been nicer. And then Poison Ivy says, I know. Oh, that is some cold shit, man. Amazing. But to be honest with you.
Oh, I'm just, thank you.
Yeah, I'm here for who Janet's going to end up with. Because I'm pulling for Croc and Janet. And I don't know, man. I don't know. Janet's been kind of all over the place. And you know, I just want her to land safely, and I don't know why, but I'm pulling for Croc.
You're shipping Jock, Granite?
Yep. Yeah.
I feel like
I like Jock. That.
We well, did this joke know, maybe before.
Sure. Yeah.
Anyway, great comic, consistently great. Tramps of the Apocalypse, number 2 from Dark Horse Comics by Alice Darrow. This is a satirical book set in a post-apocalyptic future where men are men and women are women, and women are trying to kill them whenever they can. Man, I just, in particular, love the art in this book. We're following our titular tramps, I guess. I don't think they call themselves tramps, but these three women who are driving along, they have captured one of the malfaction who is super tiny, and they keep carrying him in, like, bike baskets and things. It's just very fun. I'm having a fun time reading this book.
This is fun. This is weird, but very entertaining. Tons of action and silliness. Love the art style. Love the tone of this humor. Love the whole vibe of this. This is great.
Yeah, it's really skewering masculinity and the manosphere in a very specific way that only really works through sci-fi satire. So if that's the sort of thing you're looking for, definitely pick this up. Uncanny X-Men, number 19 from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by David Marquez, per the cover. Great cover. We get to see that Gail Simone is once again...
It is a great cover.
It is a great cover.
Glad you pointed that out.
Gail Simone is once again writing Deadpool and Outlaw back together. They've been hired for a job that sends them into direct conflict with the X-Men. Meanwhile, the X-Men are, as usual, grappling with a lot of different things, including the very friendly mayor of New Orleans, who wants to set up an Uncanny Village theme park for them. Curious what our New Orleans listeners think about this particular plot point. I guess we'll see. Let us know in the comments or on the Discord. What do you think about this one, Pete?
Yeah, this is a great team and a sweet-ish. Love the ending. Hits you right in the feels. You know, the only kind of qualms I had was a little upset that Deadpool kind of fucked with Mr. Waffles a little bit. But other than that, I'm having a great time. This is a very enjoyable issue.
Yeah, I really like the second half of this issue, in particular where Jubilee is wrapping around to the plot line that was left dangling after the Free Comic Book Day issue. Like you said, very poignant, very interesting, and a really dark beginning involving, I think it's one, the Sentinel people who are running Grey Malkin in prison. But if anything felt vestigial in this book, it was bringing in Deadpool and Outlaw, who kind of show up, fight, and are like, see you guys later. And that's pretty much it. I wish they played into it like a little bit more. That would have been nice. But
it was so many pages, you know?
Only so many pages. Only so many years in a life.
Whoa.
Sisterhood, a Hyde Street story, number two from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Mytel Zuchut, art by Layla Lays. We are following two best friends from childhood, one who died in a sorority hazing accident, but thanks to a little supernatural shenanigans over on Hyde Street, she is now a water zombie living in mirrors and glass windows, and things get darker from there. One of the big questions that I had had for the first issue is, how does this continue? How does this be a series? And I think with the second issue, it really proved how it does, as they are going to slowly take revenge on
revenge the sorority.
Revenge is the answer. One by one. But not revenge in a way that our living character may like. This is good. Good series. Dark and twisted.
Yeah, agreed. And the kind of creepy water zombie thing is really effective, and you like the twists and turns and the kind of like what just happened. That's all really fun. So this continues to be great, and I'm excited for more revenge from the world of the water zombie.
Arcana Royale, number four from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by A.C. Zamudio. This is the final issue of this series about a sort of poker game that is for the fate of the entire world, played with demons and otherworldly beings. Gets dark, gets bloody as it reaches its climactic end. Really enjoyed this series. If you missed it, definitely pick it up and trade or the individual issues. It's an interesting world that they leave open potentially for more.
Yeah, and cool cover. Love this kind of like high stakes card playing fun and the twists and turns. The art's great. Hard to make something that's kind of like a still kind of thing look great, but it really does a great job at it. So very enjoyable.
And last but not least, Ultimate Wolverine, number eight for Marvel, written by Chris Condon, art by Alessandro Capuccio. Now that Wolverine has been unbrainwashed, that's definitely not the word, he and the rest of the mutants are going to free some other people. Unfortunately, Angel, as you can see on the cover, has gotten there first, and it is bloody and bad. You seem to be cheering, Pete, so what'd you think about this one?
Yeah, it's a trap. Yeah, cool cover. Badass last panel. This is just kind of a great action art, kind of cool tone and fun, kind of this, Bucky Barnes kind of Wolverine type of thing. So, yeah, I'm very much enjoying this, and I keep meaning to talk about this, but complimenting Marvel's kind of two-page touching Peter David thing is something I keep meaning to bring up, and was in this issue as well. So it's great to kind of see Marvel kind of do that for people.
I really like this book, but two things that I find interesting that are related. One, I'm not quite sure what this is now that Wolverine isn't brainwashed, now that he isn't the Winter Soldier. He seems to be Wolverine, which is cool, but how is this different? How is this the ultimate Wolverine? I guess we'll find out. And the other thing is, this is more Ultimate X-Men than Ultimate X-Men. So, like I said, these are related, but I wonder how we get back to really getting that razor focus on Wolverine versus making it a classic X-Men team-up book in a dark future, which we've seen in the regular universe a lot of times. So, like this, gorgeous art, like you said, but those are questions I have as we continue throughout this book. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. Subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and many more. Until next time, keep humping them brains, but not hunting them, because those are two different things.
Two very different things.